Hello and welcome to The Signal. I'm Avery Mullen.
And I'm Anastasia Payne. We're with the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism.
And this is our last show for the term, which means this will be the last time you get to hear our wonderful voices.
Right? It's so sad that it's ending. So sit back, stay tuned, and enjoy.
This week, Acadia University's Student Union opened a new resource for students, the first on-campus sexual health resource center in Atlantic Canada. Its manager hopes to fill some gaps and maybe even change the culture surrounding sex on campus. Nicola Sagan has more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
They're like a sleeve or like a stroke, so they use for like people.
The grand opening of Acadia University's new sexual health center attracted many students and their questions.
So it's like a masturbatory game kind of thing.
Hannah Hutchinson is the manager of the center. She says it's particularly important for university students to have a safe place to explore everything sex-related.
It's important that students are able to access the information and the resources and have questions answered that is evidence-based and unbiased, and so they can make the choices that they want safely, comfortably, and positively.
She says some students just want to pick up some free condoms. Others might not know what a condom is. They can come to the center to get referrals to healthcare services, to borrow books, and even to participate in workshops about topics like consent or sex toy use.
And then down here we have gender-affirming products, and right now we have in three different kinds of packers.
It's also a place for 2S LGBTQIA+ students to access specific care. Samantha Mabry is a fourth-year student at Acadia. For the past year, she's been lobbying for this center. Now that it's open, she stops by almost every day to help out.
It's so exciting. I'm so overly enthusiastic about it. I think my friends are tired of hearing about it.
Mabry says work surrounding sexual health and education at Acadia used to fall on women's and gender or pride groups run by student volunteers. They often didn't have the time or resources to be effective.
Knowledge about your sexual health is a right, and so many people just did not have it.
Hutchinson says the center is part of a larger movement to break down the stigmas associated with sex.
Instead of only focusing on some of the more important but also harmful aspects of sex and sexuality on campus, I'm trying to promote a sex positive culture where we can feel free to talk about the good aspects of sex and sexuality.
She says she's thrilled that students now have a place to get information and explore in a positive way. For The Signal, I'm Nicola Sagan.
Still in the valley, if you've driven by Windsor on Highway 101 recently, you might have noticed a small camp by the road. It's part of a months-long protest over the management of the nearby Avon River. As Josh Hoffman tells us, despite the cold, they don't plan on leaving until their voices are heard.
Indigenous protesters first set up the camp last May. It's grown since then, with demonstrators raising Indigenous flags and signs, even building their own supply shed.
At first, it was like cars in a fire pit. That was really it.
Zachary Paul is a 27-year-old from the Mi'kmaq community Membertou. He spent most of the last 6 months at the camp. They oppose plans to replace floodgates on the Avon River. The gates are part of a system of earth, rock, and road, a causeway. It was built in the 1960s to help prevent flooding in the Windsor area. It resulted in the man-made freshwater pond known as Lake Pisiquid. Now, the floodgates are being replaced as part of work to twin Highway 101. Paul is living in his RV, one of roughly half a dozen vehicles in the camp. He says the floodgates, which are only open periodically, prevent Gaspereau from swimming upstream to spawn.
It's a simple message. A free-flowing river is a healthy river. And to do anything that damages that is just poor form. It shows that you don't care about your ecology. It shows that you don't care about your people. It shows that you don't care about your fish.
Fishers, Indigenous groups, and others have called for increased fish passage for years, but in November, protesters started stopping traffic on Highway 101. Victor Oulton is a local farmer. He's with a group called the Avon River Freshwater Stakeholders. They say there are benefits from the causeway separating freshwater and saltwater portions of the river.
As far as I can recall, pretty much every farmer on the upstream side of the causeway is in favor of keeping as much fresh water there as possible.
He says there's roughly 3,500 acres of prime farmland that depend on the source of fresh water. He thinks a new causeway will allow fish to move upstream.
If there's any way that we can get better fish passage and keep fresh water there, we'd be probably better off in the long run for everybody.
Trevor Avery is an Acadia University biology professor. He worked on an environmental assessment of the Avon River with a Mi'kmaq conservation group as part of the planning for the work. Avery says from a biological perspective, a free-flowing river is best.
When the gate's been open and fish have been there and moved up into the system, there is evidence that there's a successful spawning going on and, that's rekindling some of the populations.
Avery says operators should increase the opening of floodgates around times when fish are spawning. A Fisheries and Oceans Canada spokesperson said in an email, the Nova Scotia government's plan to replace aging floodgates should be a long-term solution for preventing flooding and protecting fish and fish habitat. But Zachary Paul and the other protesters say they're not going anywhere until they're satisfied that's being done. For The Signal, I'm Josh Hoffman.
A Coal Harbour boy has turned a bottle drive into a successful fundraiser for the IWK Children's Hospital. Ethan Edwards was inspired after spending time in the hospital last year. Anastasia, you visited Ethan this week, right?
That's right. I caught up with the 10-year-old and his mom, Allison Englehart, at their home in Dartmouth.
It's a normal evening in 10-year-old Ethan Edwards' house. But this time last year, things were anything but normal for Ethan and his family. Last February, Ethan's mom rushed him to the IWK after he almost fell asleep in class while reading.
For me, it was really scary. Normally, when you go to the emergency room, you're waiting, you check in, you hand in all your stuff, and, you know, you're waiting for hours. This time, they didn't even ask for a health card, nothing. They immediately whipped him back into the back room.
The diagnosis? Type 1 diabetes. Ethan spent 3 days in the hospital, with his mother sleeping on a cot at his side. No fun for Englehart, but Ethan thought of it as a little adventure.
Well, I gotta sit in bed and watch all the other kids have to go to school because it was right out the window.
Now, Ethan proudly shows off an envelope of cash he raised for the IWK. He collected bottles and cash donations and raised $2,500. His mother says they were overwhelmed by the generosity of their neighbors.
And she was really excited about that. I just sit, like every night she'd get in that chair over there and just smile.
Ethan says he wanted to give back to the hospital.
Because they helped me so much, and then if they have more money, they can help other kids too.
The money will help buy new equipment for the IWK. Jason Thorpe is with the IWK Foundation. He says about 60 people have signed up to be fundraisers. The foundation calls them warriors. Each warrior creates a donation page where they can share their story or personal connection to the hospital and get donations.
You do have the ability to set a goal. Most common we see is about $100. So we've actually seen a lot of goals surpassed. We've seen goals changed on the page to keep on going.
The total amount raised will be announced later today.
There's one bag I just put out that Mrs. Dudley from school gave you last night.
Meanwhile, Ethan and his mom spent last Saturday collecting bottles from all over Coal Harbour to take to the recycling center. Some neighbors even gave a $20 bill along with their empties. Englehart says she's proud of the way Ethan's used his diagnosis to help others.
And so it was really nice to see him take something that could have been a negative experience mm-hmm. and very quickly turn it into something positive that he was doing for someone else. So that mm-hmm.
Ethan says he'll be fundraising with the Warrior Program again next year as well. He has an account with the Great Canadian Recycling Depot on Portland Street where people can drop off donations year-round to support the IWK.
It's the annual Winter Bike Week in Halifax. The Halifax Cycling Coalition organizes it every year to encourage more people to get out on their bikes, even in the cold weather. But some people still find the idea of pedaling in winter scary. Alex Johnson got on his bike to tell us the story of one woman who's been trying to become a winter cyclist.
It's a crisp day in Halifax, and I'm biking down Roby Street. The road is narrower from the snowbanks, which means there's less space between me and the cars passing by. It's not the safest arrangement, and for someone like Courtney Morrison, it can be a barrier to getting out on a bike.
I really want to be a winter cyclist. I am someone who is very passionate about alternative transportation. And despite all of those values that I'm trying to live, I'm still too scared to consistently be commuting in the winter times.
During her first trip out this winter, Morrison biked through the new roundabout at the north end of the Halifax Common. It didn't go well. She ended up filing a police report.
A car kind of came into my lane. I looked over in hopes that they would kind of give me some eye contact and tell me what they were planning on doing. And they ended up just yelling at me later about staying off the road.
It's incidents like that that make her partner Cody Powell worry. He knows she's a good cyclist, but he worries about the other people on the road.
My biggest fear is that she's going to get clipped by a driver who's impatient or frustrated being stuck behind a bike, because I think those are real risks.
Jenna Moliner is co-owner of Halifax Cycles and also teaches bicycle road safety. She says ice can be dangerous, and snowbanks make it harder for cyclists to be seen. To help with that, she says you should take up more of the lane to stay visible and out of the ice. And if a driver gets aggressive,
just simply pull off the road and don't engage. Because it doesn't really matter whether you're a cyclist or another driver. If another driver is having road rage, you just don't want to engage.
Morrison hasn't let the road rage incident stop her. She's gone out half a dozen times this winter. And she believes in how good cycling can be for people and the planet.
So it's an important thing to me.
It might take some courage, but take it from this reporter. It's a bit scary, but also fun. For The Signal, I'm Alex Johnson.
Black filmmakers are stepping into the spotlight this month. They're part of the country's largest African-Canadian mentorship project, the Being Black in Canada Project. Their work is featured in the upcoming Halifax Black Film Festival. It features 75 films, four from local filmmakers. It runs February 23rd to the 28th. Deborah Runt is the executive director of the Halifax Black Film Festival. She spoke to The Signal's Preet Bogle.
It started in 2014. Fabian Cola is the president and founder of Being Black in Canada and of the Halifax Black Film Festival. But at Being Black in Canada, she started in 2014 when she noticed the lack of diversity in the film industry in general and realized that not only were, you know, Black creators and filmmakers not being hired, there just weren't enough Black filmmakers in the industry. So started a mentorship program, training emerging Black filmmakers and putting them through the ropes. So basically these filmmakers go from A to Z. They start with professional training with professional directors and writers and producers, and they find out how to get the money. They find out how to create their films. And at the end of this program, they come out of it with a short doc. So it started in Montreal and then went to Toronto and last year here in Halifax as well. So we started Being Black in Halifax program last year. We trained five filmmakers, actually in Halifax, four. Lily Nottage, Tyler Simmons, Cardisha Provo, and Andre Anderson. And they have their short docs. They run about 10 minutes each, and each one has a really different perspective. And quite nice. Lily's is a story about a Jamaican woman who came here and immigrated and started a restaurant. Tyler Simmons touches on his journey and the mental health issues. And Cardisha, she goes home. She's from North Preston, and she talks a lot about her community and things that are happening there. And Andre's is, a follow-up to the Black Lives Matter movement. So each one is different and unique. And in 2021, which we're in right now, we're moving the program to Calgary, to Ottawa, and to Vancouver. So it is the biggest incubator in the country for emerging Black filmmakers. So we're literally changing the face of the film industry and changing diversity. So we're really excited to have that here in Halifax.
That's Deborah Rent speaking with The Signal's Preet Bogle. You can get all the details on the festival and the films at halifaxblackfilm.com.
You're listening to The Signal on CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax and at SignalHFX on Twitter. We're bringing you the stories from the audio workshop at the University of King's College School of Journalism. I'm Avery Mullen.
And I'm Anastasia Payne. Still to come on the show, we'll find out what some people have planned for Valentine's Day. And we'll see what else is going on around town this weekend. Plus, the story of an online florist that's left some customers feeling wilted.
The pandemic has changed the way many small businesses operate. In some cases, it's meant a complete overhaul. Robert Blotnicki owns a Halifax pawn shop that's shifted its business model. As Zarnagar Khan reports, they may not make as much money, but they're surviving in tough times.
Pawn shops are known as lenders of last resort. They lend you money against your possessions until you can pay it back with interest in a short time, or they sell it. But at our local pawn shops like Halifax Buy and Sell, the pandemic changed all that.
And for several months, we actually had a period of time where nobody would come in to sell any kind of home entertainment or computer homework type items, and it became very difficult to keep those on our shelves.
Blotniki says federal government programs like the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit, or CERB, made the difference.
And we did see an enormous increase in traffic of people coming through, spending their CERB checks on whatever they needed to secure their needs for work and entertainment at home.
Like other financial institutions, Blotniki's shop stayed open during the pandemic, even when other retail stores were closed.
Works for us.
Demand was so high and the pawn side so low, he had to look beyond his usual used stocks, buying new products from third-party suppliers.
Through wholesaling, drop shipping, things like that, that we were able to continue to do business when other forms of business just plummeted.
Blotniki says he's still ordering from outside sources, but he has learned a valuable lesson in business.
Be absolutely nimble and don't be afraid to try new things.
But the pawn business is slowly coming back to something more normal, and the short-term high-interest loans that go with that business are where he makes most of his money. For The Signal, I'm Zarnagar Khan.
Hey Avery, have you seen all the TikTok videos about fufu?
Fufu? What's that? Something like tofu?
No, it's a starchy West African food made out of boiled cassava, plantain, or yams. It's shaped into a ball and you dip it in soup.
So what are all the videos about?
People have posted videos of themselves trying fufu. It's called the Fufu Challenge. According to the LA Times in California, the videos have been watched more than 250 million times. Have a listen to one of them.
Get your hands. You pull it up like this, like so, I guess. And then you just dip it inside the fufu, like this.
So now the owners of a West African restaurant in Halifax are reacting too. They say some of the videos are offensive, and they've got plans to hold a real-life fufu challenge to set the record straight about the ethnic cuisine. Regu Para has more.
It has to be taught how to eat it, and which the video I think I saw wasn't like that. I don't think it's fun.
Marianne Kruma says she found the latest fufu challenge videos on TikTok disappointing and offensive. She runs Mary's African Cuisine in Halifax with her husband, Jonathan Roberts.
You can't just make fun of food just for the sake of making fun of it, because you can offend, especially with the, I guess there's a racial element here.
Many fufu newbies on TikTok chewed the food without knowing how to eat it and spat it out. Roberts says pasta connoisseurs would be offended the same way if people were cutting spaghetti with scissors. He says etiquette is critical when it comes to eating this spongy staple from West Africa, and the people in the videos are doing it all wrong.
It's kind of like learning how to eat with chopsticks. You have to pinch the piece off properly, dip it properly, and don't chew it.
The couple is now planning a series of events called Eat Fufu with Mary, and Kruma will teach her favorite customers how to eat it the right way. Robert says he'll produce a series of videos from the events and promote them on social media, including TikTok. That way, people can see the right way to eat fufu.
It's just a thing so that we can combat this fufu challenge thing by showing people how delicious fufu can be. I mean, you can do a tour of West Africa based on fufu. Yeah.
The first of the series of sessions is planned for February 22nd. And Kruma is all souped up for the chance to demonstrate the authentic cuisine of Ghana.
Yes, I'll have the fufu made, and that's going to be real fufu.
For The Signal, I'm Ragu Para.
Valentine's Day is approaching. If you're looking to order flowers for a loved one, though, beware. A disappointed shopper is warning people about an online floral company calling itself Canada's official florist. She says she's used the company to deliver flowers to her daughter, a delivery that she says left her feeling embarrassed. Michael Chubbs has the story.
I was totally heartbroken, disappointed, embarrassed. You know, I hope she didn't think this is what I picked out for her.
3 weeks ago, Michelle Scott's daughter got laid off, and then she tested positive for COVID-19 just 2 days before her birthday.
I wanted to do something nice for her, something meaningful, you know, surprise her with a little bit of, you know, love from her mom and her grandma.
So Michelle ordered her daughter 2 arrangements from a website she found through an ad on social media, bloomex.ca.
The flowers were absolutely gorgeous. It was just full, it was hearty, beautiful colors. It just totally caught my eye.
What arrived was unimpressive and thrown together.
The flowers that we received were primarily greenery, with a few daisies stuck in there that were purple. Nothing like the hydrangeas whatsoever.
So she complained to Bloomex, who said substitutions happen due to the seasonal nature of their products. They offered a $20 credit after a second complaint, but having spent about $100 on delivery, Michelle declined.
When people are unhappy with their flowers, they want a refund. There is no refund. There's no such thing.
Now that's Linda Guy. For a year, Linda worked at a Bloomex call center.
They say it's refundable, but it's not. What they do, they'll send you another bouquet. They just want their money back, and that doesn't happen.
Linda says experiences like Michelle's were not uncommon. It even happened to her when she sent her sister flowers.
She goes, Linda, I didn't want to say anything to you, but the flowers are all dead.
While the Bloomex website boasts same-day delivery, Linda says employees are told to guarantee that, even if they know it won't arrive on time.
We were told to say, yes, it's guaranteed.
Linda's advice to people looking to buy flowers?
Do not shop at Bloomex. Go anywhere else, because you will not get what you ordered.
While Michelle waits to hear back about her third complaint, she continues to use social media to warn others about her experience, and several Facebook groups with thousands of members each are doing the same. The Signal contacted Bloomex for comment, but the company did not respond. For The Signal, I'm Michael Chubbs.
You might think twice about flowers, at least online florists, but with pandemic restrictions easing and such low case numbers, Valentine's Day could be somewhat normal this year. This Sunday, people in Halifax can most likely keep at least some of their V-Day traditions alive.
That's right. Do you have any special plans for the 14th, Anastasia?
Well, Avery, I'm glad you asked. I've got a hot date with my housecoat and a Netflix docuseries.
I fully endorse that plan. We were interested to know how other people are planning to celebrate this year. We sent the Signal's Simon Smith to talk to folks around Halifax. Adam Innes told him his plans are similar to last year.
Well, my girlfriend and I are usually always very busy all the time. And last year we were busy as well, so we just went to Mary's African Cuisine and ate a breakfast, and then we're busy the rest of the day, and then we met up at night and watched a movie. This year, we're probably going to do the same thing. I mean, Mary's is open for dine-in now, so we're trying to make it, I guess, a tradition.
Well, that's cute. What a weird way to start a new tradition. But certainly it wasn't as glamorous as Shelley and Donnie Clow's trip to the Grammys in 2012.
And then the big dilemma became what to wear, as if I was going to be on the red carpet. But it was fun. And yeah, it was a memorable year because it was the year that Whitney Houston passed away. And we were just, we were 3 hotels down from where she passed away. So it was a sad mark on the Grammys, but it was neat and how they quickly
paid tribute to her.
Yeah, paid tribute to her. So, yeah, it was a memorable one and some great acts that year, too.
Yeah, Adele and yeah. Rihanna and all kinds of great acts.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney.
Yeah, it was a good memory.
How did they get into the Grammys?
Simon says it was a work trip of some kind. Nice work.
Indeed. For most of us, we might just get a nice gift for Valentine's Day, right?
Well, candy is a traditional gift. Janet Marathew at Sweet Jane's Gift and Confectionery says there's also a lot of theme giving this year, personal gifts that last.
They are trying to incorporate a gift item in there, something that says, you know, that's more personal, whether it be a fondue set and, you know, that it's lasting. So it'll stick or, you know, stay around for a bit. Or it could be a nice bowl or, you know, it could be that you're significant other is a big barbecue person, and so, you know, we'll put barbecue things in there, or I guess themes, you know, if they're if they love taking relaxing with baths, or, you know, personal products, things like that, that we can do that.
That reminds me, I have some shopping to do.
Well, happy Valentine's Day, Avery. I hope you get a nice fondue set. And thanks to Simon Smith for working the heartbeat for us this week.
Thanks very much, Simon.
Well, it's February, and in keeping with tradition, winter has really arrived. And boy, is it cold.
Brr, I'm a popsicle here in downtown Halifax.
But you know someone who's making good use of the ice, right?
I do. Let me tell you about it in this week's edition of What's Up Halifax. While most of us have been scraping ice off our cars, one local man is carving it into something beautiful. Joel Palmer, who also goes by Swamp Bear, is usually a chainsaw carver. But this year, he's bringing his skills to bear on something a little cooler. He's the only Atlantic Canadian competing in the federal government's Winterlude National Ice Carving Competition. He lives in Brown's Flat, New Brunswick, but the city of Halifax asked him to represent us. And he says he sees the Maritime provinces as one large community. In January, with a time limit of 28 hours, he carved a sculpture as tall as he is from a solid block of ice. Now he's competing with six other artists for the title of this year's most popular sculpture. Fittingly for the Maritimes, his entry is a surfer in a snowsuit.
I discovered surfing when I was out on the West Coast as well. And it was just it's something that became somewhat of a spiritual sort of connection with nature and the elements, stepping outside of the comfortable elements of the land and being able to breathe and stuff and going into another element of where almost, you know, you're at the force of nature and you got to go with the flow.
You can search Canada Winterlude, that's winter L-U-D-E, on Google and visit the Government of Canada website to vote for Joel. And if you'd like to try your hand at some wintry sculpture of your own, check out Sackville Snow Days from the Sackville Business Association. They're running an online snowman competition so you can catch some winter sun without catching COVID. For those who prefer to warm up with some laughter, meanwhile, Elle's Bistro on Barrington Street is hosting comedy shows at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Jordan Foisey and Travis Lindsay from This Hour Has 22 Minutes will both be there. Or, if you're looking for something a little more up-tempo, rock and roller Blake Johnston is playing tomorrow night at Beerley's House of Blues and Ribs, also at 7:30 and also on Barrington. This is him with his new song, Asleep at the Wheel. I'm giving up and I lost all hope.
Show for today and the last one of the term.
If there's anything you want to hear again, we post links to our stories on Twitter. Our handle is at SignalHFX.
Thanks to our social media editors, Josh Hoffman and Raghu Para.
A shout out to our technician, Mark Pinio, in the control room.
Our audio professor is Pauline Dakin. I'm Anastasia Payne.
And I'm Avery Mullen. Have a great weekend.